Welcome to episode 3 of the End Line. We're recording the evening of March 5th in the wake of the coldest game in MLS history. I'll let our panelists announce themselves and give us their favorite cold weather soccer watching hack gear. What made your day on Saturday?
My name is Joseph Samuelson. I am the founder and editor of Rapids Republic, and my tip was lots of hand warmers. I used 4 for the game last Saturday.
And is that 4 at once or yes. 4 different times?
Okay, yes, yeah. 4 at once. Mm-hmm. One in each coat pocket, and then one in each of my shoes.
Nice.
I'm Abby Mood. I run the Burgundy Wave, and my tip is to go inside and watch from inside the press box.
It was a little funny to see how lagged the TV was. So it was like you hear the fans cheer, and then it was like, okay, now watch the TV, and you can see the 30 seconds leading up to whatever good thing just happened. It was like its own instant replay.
I'm Connor Cape, the play-by-play voice of the Colorado Rapids on the Altitude Sports Radio Network. My tip for watching things in cold weather is to layer and to always wear wool socks.
Wool socks. Good for the moisture wicking. Jess?
I'm Jess Howen. I am the official reporter for the Colorado Rapids over at MLS Female. And to be honest, I don't really have a tip. I've just learned that I'm going to be in pain from the cold by the end of the game and just to deal with it.
It was a memorable opening day at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. Here is Benny Failhaber talking to us after the game.
It was crazy. It felt like, that's what I told the guys, it felt like back in fifth grade playing tackle football on a snow day. So didn't even feel like a league. It just felt like, it didn't feel like a real game, to be honest. It was crazy, but you know, for all the guys that stuck together in that game, I think it's huge. You know, it's great to win at home to get 3 points, but when you get a point the way we did today, coming from behind, down a man, in those conditions, against a good team, everybody put, you know, 100% effort. Guys that came in off the bench were spectacular. I mean, Danny coming in and doing a job, you're freezing on the bench, and 25 minutes in, you got to come and do a job playing down a man the whole game. He was fantastic. Andre coming in and getting that goal. Fantastic for, you know, a rookie guy to be able to feel what that, you know, that rush is like, and we're going to count on him to do that more often. So, you know, I could go through the list, but the guys were phenomenal. It was a big time point for us, and with how many new guys we have on this team, I think it's a really big statement from us to, you know, come back and get a point when it felt like none were there for us.
You always hope for a big crowd on opening day. Hardcore fans were excited about the snow. The reported attendance, what they call tickets distributed, was over 12K. To the eye, I would call it 3, 4, 5K, something like that. Was this better or worse than one of those sunny 50-degree winter afternoons in Denver, right? It was memorable, but is it the way you want to open the season?
Better. It was better. It was better, it was better, it was better because when you look back on this a year from now, 5 years from now, 20 years from now, when you're an old, aged, wizened grandfather or grandmother talking to your prodigies about
grandchildren,
the early days of Major League Soccer, you're going to say, I remember this one home opener against Portland Timbers, down to 10 men in 20 minutes. And the snow gusting out of the north and the south.
You couldn't even see the field.
Could barely see the field.
But somehow.
Tim Howard's beard frozen. And the youngster, Andre Shinyashiki, finds the equalizer at the death. That's what's going to make it great. I mean, good weather's nice, but bad weather makes a good memory.
Yeah, I'm going to concur with Connor on that one. I think that how exciting and fun the game was despite the miserable conditions. I know it's going to be a story I tell to a lot of friends I have, you know, through my life.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna have to agree. I mean, as much as I love the warmer weather, it's kind of good to have that, like, hey, I sat through that and I got to watch an awesome game.
I survived the snow classic, right? Number 3.
Should make t-shirts. I don't got one because I was down one side, but you guys can all have one.
I was technically there for Snow Classic 3.
I was in the press box.
Abby, I thought that Tim looked especially spry, had some really strong saves and goal. Do you think we can expect that kind of performance consistently this season, or is that a matter of starting the year healthy and something that's going to wear down over time?
I'd like to hope that we'll see that kind of performance over the season, especially because it's his last season, you know, swan song, all that stuff. There's a lot of attention around Tim Howard and how he's playing this year. But I think more realistically, we'll see flashes of that, and then he'll be an average keeper for the rest of the time.
Any other thoughts on Tim Howard?
Well, I think there's really two things you could look at here. On one hand, the team has improved dramatically since last season, and a rising tide tends to lift all boats. So if the team's performing well, it's reasonable to suspect that Howard might put in a good performance he wouldn't necessarily otherwise have, just because of the way the team is performing. That said, he's retiring for a reason. We're coming along to the end of his career, and it definitely shouldn't be expected that he performs at this level throughout 2019.
Jess, thoughts?
You know, honestly, my gut instinct is that if he can perform like he did in that kind of weather, you know, going against everything that he did, I think we can see this from him on a consistent basis, especially as, you know, the weather gets better, the field gets easier to play on. You know, there's a lot that he was going up against that he had an incredible game while having to deal with these things. So I think we could see consistent performances like this from him.
I think you could also make the argument that everyone was trying a little bit harder because of the weather and because they were down 10 men. I think you could also, I don't remember if you tweeted it, Joseph, or someone was talking about how he had to make some of those saves to make up for other things that were going on. Okay, it wasn't you. Sorry. I wasn't trying to make you feel bad about it.
No, that's fine. I'm not saying the tweet's wrong. I'm just saying it wasn't me.
I'm just saying that I think that's a total possibility. I think you could look at it from, well, if he can do it in snow and, you know, single digit weather, then why couldn't he do it in 50 degrees and sunny? But I think you could also make the argument that everyone was trying a little bit harder for a variety of reasons. But I'd love to be wrong.
We knew the back line was questionable coming in with 5 of our 6 center backs appearing on the injury report. Started the game with Rosenberry, Schuberg, Wynn, and Serna on the back line. Schuberg left with the red in the 27th minute. Connor, where do you stand on the red card?
Red cards are like all the other judgments in MLS. It comes down to the ref. There's no point in arguing about it. You can go through the appeals process, but it hit his hand. I mean, it hit his hand. Like, it's you feel hard done by it because he was going to ground, but it hit his hand.
But the problem is that it is subjective to the referee. I'm not saying the red card was wrong. I'll put that out there. However, in the Sporting and LAFC game, there was a guy in the box, had both hands behind his back, moved his right hand out from behind his back, moved it out to the side. The ball hit his hand. The ref reviewed it. I don't remember his name. He's a new guy on Sporting.
Fontas.
Yes. Put his hand, purposefully moved his hand from behind his back to out to his side, hit the ball, and yet the ref reviewed it and waved it off. So my problem is that there's no consistency. Like, the refs need to follow the rules or do whatever they want to do.
Well, I saw a particular pundit today, Alexi Lawless of Fox Sports. He said on his podcast, this wasn't a personal story. He said it to everybody. Alexi Lawless said you should change the rules so that if it just touches your hand, incidental or on purpose, it's a foul.
Yeah, and that's where the
clarifying
rule was.
That's clarifying.
Like, historically, it feels to me like the rules, anytime you have a rule, a system that has to change over and over and get refined over and over, it tends to me to mean that you're pursuing the wrong path.
All it is it's soccer's version of what is a catch. It's soccer's version of the block versus charge call.
Totally agree.
It's subjective, and they tinker with it every year because they're like, we can get it right this year. And the truth is, at some point or at every point, there's going to be unsatisfied customers no matter what. So stop trying to please everybody. Just go with the one that makes the most common sense and roll with it.
I feel like the NFL's catch rule has evolved to a point where it's an embarrassment now. Like, no one knows what a catch is, and it seems completely arbitrary. And it does seem simple, right? I think the double jeopardy kind of theory in fouls in the box and so forth makes sense. But if we just say, if it hits your hand, it's a foul. If it's in the box, it's a PK. As far as the red versus yellow, feels like it's okay to leave that subjective to me. But, like, are we just trying to make things too complicated?
I don't know if it's trying to make things too complicated. Where I stand on, like, the red card that happened this past weekend is basically the fact that there are so many good, compelling arguments on each side that makes I am okay with whatever subjective call the referee made given the circumstances, because I feel like I haven't actually been convinced by somebody on either side, like by any of the arguments on each side saying that was a red, wasn't a red. I feel like because none of those I find particularly convincing over the others, that I'm left with what the ref called on the field, and he called a red, and you just got to live with that sometimes.
The biggest surprise to me after that red card was a Danny Wilson sighting on the field. What did y'all take from him, Rosenberry, Wynn, and Cerna making up the makeshift back line?
You know, I was a lot more, like, I was surprised by Danny Wilson. I was not impressed with him at all last season, and so I was kind of, I was very leery when they brought him in, and I was honestly pretty worried. But then it turned out that the one we really needed to worry about was Declan Wynn with that own goal. But other than that,
he was trying so hard.
When you start,
he was, and it's
when you have two center backs in your 11, not necessarily your starting 11, because I know Wilson came on late.
In your 10,
but yeah, so yeah, when you have two center backs in your 10, and both of them were on the bottom 10 lowest average center back ratings in MLS last season of defenders who had more than 15 appearances.
That's a nuanced stat. Okay,
defenders who had 15 appearances
or more.
Okay, and this is, what are we talking, like Audi Player Index?
No, we're talking about like who scored rating. Okay, like, so they had the two of the 10 lowest in the league. Wilson's at the bottom. Wynn's number 10, but I feel like when you have two players with, you know, that on their resume on the field at the same time, you almost should be expecting something like an own goal to happen. And so I told my wife when Wilson came on the field, I told her that so something was about to go wrong.
What'd you think about that back line, Connor?
I'm gonna go a different direction and diverge away from that. I think Danny Wilson played his best game as a Rapid, and I noticed that when I was calling the game and I just kept saying the name Danny Wilson, Danny Wilson, Danny Wilson, breaking up a pass, intercepting a pass, making it a crucial tackle before Blanco or Valeri gets into the box or makes a move into the box. I thought Danny Wilson looked phenomenal. I mean, Dylan Cerna, he had a game from the back line. I thought Danny Wilson probably had the best game of the whole back line. And to come on like that after a red card when you're down to 10 men and you're in those conditions and to play that well, I think that says a lot about Danny Wilson. And I think what it says going forward about Danny Wilson is, okay, so we've seen what you can do now and we've seen you play at this high of a level. Maybe last year was a confluence of bad events that led to, you know, what Joseph pointed out, where a stat with a list that you don't want to be at the bottom on. And maybe that's because it takes time to adjust to MLS. Maybe it takes time to create chemistry with your teammates. Maybe it takes time to just move your family halfway across the world and set up shop somewhere else. And now maybe he's a little more settled in, because I thought he looked terrific.
Do you think it's possible that Saturday was less pressure than last year when you're coming in to be the 10th man? In the snow, everything just seems kind of messed up. And maybe there's a part of you that just says, like, let me just play and just see what happens.
Maybe,
right?
That's it. Maybe he was freed up by everything else going on. He's like, all right, we're already down to 10 men. We're playing in terrible conditions. Let me just go play soccer. And maybe that'll free him up in the future where he's like, oh, yeah, I remember how to do this now. I remember why I like doing this so much.
I wonder, last season, was he always with Tommy Smith? Tommy was in most every game, right? Maybe there's something about that pairing that doesn't quite click.
From what I've seen, and I haven't like checked this against every single lineup Hudson has ever put out, but But Hudson typically likes to pair somebody. Like when he's using a four back, he likes to use a right-footed center back with a left-footed center back. Occasionally he will choose like a more mobile center back to pair along with Axel or Tommy. But maybe that is the case, that keeping that when Wilson and Smith are on the field together, that's two left-footers. Maybe that just doesn't work in the system. Maybe that doesn't work with how they want to play out the ball from the back.
Looking towards midfield and the offense, we saw obviously an early goal from Kamara after a great ball movement around the field. Is this what the 2019 Rapids offense can look like?
You know, I really hope so. I liked the pairing of Kamara with Acosta. I felt like they played off each other really well, especially with some of the play balls that came up from Failhaber and how they just it just worked really nicely. I was wondering, in the 15th minute, like off of the goal, did Acosta do a no-look pass over to Kamara? Is that what I saw on the replay?
I thought he tried, but that didn't work. And then he came back down and tried, and then they scored the goal. But I could be wrong. What did you see, Mr. Play-by-Play?
I don't remember if it was a no-look pass. I remember he tried to send a ball in early at the top of the box, and it was deflected back out towards the end line, and then him and Valentin or Mabiala went chasing after it, and then he got there first and sent it in across, and then Kai Kamara was on the end of it.
Either way, it was a great play, beautiful goal. It's a really good look. I'm really excited to see what we have in store.
I'm already pretty excited about Kai Kamara, and I felt like Saturday just doubled that. I think he's credited with a solid work rate, but especially seeing him track back, and it felt like it was him and Tim on the goal line half the time, and then he'd be up on offense and then back in the midfield and just all over the place, and didn't, it seemed like he was enjoying it in a way. Like it was a fight. It wasn't like, I can't believe I have to do this, but his body language involvement seemed super positive. I think we can only take so much away with the conditions and the numbers and so forth, but I'm curious this weekend with Seattle. I think we're going to get to really see what happens when they're playing for real. As the game went on and the snow piled up, things slowed down, right? It got sloppier. By halftime, they were shoveling the lines. We saw the goal from Failhaber.
And using leaf blowers, too.
And using leaf blowers. That was impressive. That's how you know it's really cold, because the snow is so light. Benny had the goal in the 46th. As we mentioned, we had the own goal from Wynn in the 66th. And then finally, the last second goal from Shinyashiki in stoppage time. Abby, what stood out to you about play on the field, especially like kind of the second half?
I thought that the intensity in the second half was impressive. I mean, obviously, we've talked about the conditions and how that, in some ways, I think, was a big equalizer. But I also think there were most of the second half, I don't think you could even tell that we were down a man. And like I said, yes, that was probably part of the conditions, and Portland couldn't take advantage of there only being 10 men on the Rapids. But I just think we saw an effort and... yeah, I guess just an effort that we haven't seen in a while.
Wow. I got to interject right there.
Oh, really?
One thing that you cannot fault the 2018 Colorado Rapids for is lack of effort.
That is not what I was saying.
No. That team.
Not what I was saying.
The comebacks against Minnesota, the on the road in Minnesota, the beating the Galaxy at home, drawing the Galaxy with Nicky Jackson's late goal, late equalizer there.
They had moments.
This team, for all of its flaws in 2018, this team did not lack fight.
Some
did not
say,
lack character.
Some say Jack McBean is still running on the field to this day.
They did. They put in the effort, but this is a completely different team. It's not even the same team that it was last year. And I think we haven't seen
last
the
year,
effort result like this.
We saw it with
many
the
times.
Win against Minnesota, the win against Dallas.
There were wins last year?
On the last game of the year. We go down a goal to Dallas, and then Cole Bassett finds an equalizer, and Tommy Smith finds the winner.
I mean, they showed up and played the game.
Against the playoff team?
They did their job.
I'm just saying, character and fight.
I was not implying that they didn't have character.
And part of that is turning over into this year. Like Coach Hudson's talked about this so much. You know, we're building a culture, we're building character. That's one of those things that you can really take away from last year into this year, and you could see it pay off. I think there were some really hard lessons learned in 2018, but we learned them, and now you're seeing them pay off.
TBD. There's only been one game, so we'll see.
So it's
what
a small
lessons.
Sample size. Sure.
It's a very small sample size.
But they could have quit so many times on Saturday. They could have quit after the red card. They could have quit before kickoff when it was snowing.
That's why I'm talking about effort.
But they didn't quit. They didn't quit with the snow. They didn't quit with the red card. They didn't quit going down a goal. They didn't quit equalizing and then going down a goal again.
That's what I just said.
And as a sidebar to that, it sort of makes the game frustrating looking back at the tape, because if Colorado has 11 men, like, I'm fairly certain they win this game. Now, things don't always go the way you expect in soccer, but like the way Colorado was playing, with the degree of confidence and the way they were working in Hudson's system, especially in those first 27 minutes, I believe, before the red card, I was just very impressed, and I was expecting Colorado to honestly run away with the game. Had there not been, had Schuberg not gotten a red.
Abby and Connor, I think you can both be right, where there were moments last season where things came together, but there were also a lot of them where, as a fan, I felt like I was waiting for someone to wake the team up. You know, it was periods in a game where you can just see it's like kind of struggle, just plodding. And it was a place I always kind of attributed to like a Sam Cronin type role in 2016, of somebody who just is essentially like the conductor, is manipulating the attitude of the team on the field and getting the performance that they needed. And I think that was really notable Saturday, where, as you said, there were a lot of points to hang your head and a lot of points to feel bad. And you didn't see it for minutes, whether it was going down, whether it's the red card, it was the own goal. There was no part of like, ugh, let's pass, throw a couple back passes and like wait out this 90 minutes, right? It was fight, 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 fight. And to me, that's the number one thing you can take away from the game, was collective effort, total focus, like everybody pushing the right direction, even when things didn't go well.
Well, and you could definitely see moments where the players were frustrated with what was going on. And I think that one of the big differences from 2018 was that they channeled that frustration into motivation better than they had been. And so I think they pushed a lot harder, and it was...
Well, and I think, too, it has a lot to do with the new players. Like, you're talking about Sam. We haven't had a conductor in the midfield since Sam Cronin. So who is that? Is that Benny Fellhaber now, or was it Kai Kamara? You know, I mean, I think for the first 10 minutes, he was probably the best defender that we had. So, like, who's the conductor now, or are there multiple, because we have so many great players now?
Well, that was something interesting that Fellhaber said in the postgame, was as the game was ticking down and we were still looking for that equalizer, he was the one saying, all right, guys, we need to push up a little bit. We need to start going for this goal. We can't stay back even though we've got 10 men. And then he also mentioned something about Jack Price and how he was playing off Price so well. And we saw Price in a role that we didn't see him in very often last year. I think we saw him play out on the wing against DC United. We saw him play as an eight. There was another time where he played not as a six, but it was Fellhaber who was playing that defensive midfielder role. And Price was playing a little bit further up, which allowed Benny to kind of give and go. And Benny talked about that with his goal that he scored, was if Price wasn't out there, I don't know if I would have been that high up the pitch to even be in the box to score it. So things like that.
I wonder if with Price we'll see a little bit of what I was just saying about Wilson. Of maybe last year was a little too much pressure in that, or a little too much responsibility. I think it's easy to overlook with the luxuriousness of his beard that he's still pretty young. He's 25 now. Right in that area, and there wasn't a whole lot else going on around him in the midfield, and you know, you had this constantly rotating cast of characters. I wouldn't be surprised if now, with the influence of Kamara, with the influence of Fellhaber, Acosta feeling settled and feeling like a degree of ownership and so forth, we might really see Price blossom, and blossom quickly. Joseph, did anything change about your outlook for the early season based on what you saw Saturday?
I think if you aren't buying Colorado Rapids stock right now, then you didn't watch the game this past Saturday. That's my take.
You're calling
on
playoffs.
Man.
I'm not calling playoffs. I'm just saying.
Okay, not that much stock. You're still penny stocks.
I'll call playoffs.
Calling playoffs.
I think if this team makes the playoffs, it's definitely going to be the lower end of the seven spots. Something. So, I think Colorado's ceiling, or not necessarily ceiling, but I think what you should expect, where you should expect them to finish, is somewhere around six or seven. Yeah.
Well, I think that should be said with the caveat that we've only seen one game so far. We played in some pretty tough conditions. I think I'm with Connor on this one. I think playoffs. I don't know that we're necessarily bottom. We may be more towards the middle. I don't think we're one or two, but I think, you know.
I definitely think it's an organizational failure if they don't make the playoffs.
Dang.
I'm not saying I'm certain they're there,
yeah,
but given how adamant Porg and the front office was about making the playoffs this season, it is a failure to not do so. Now, whether or not I'm convinced they make it there is irrelevant of that.
Well, I think that's every important. Every time you miss the playoffs, you failed. Something went wrong somewhere. But what I look at is, yes, every team's played 90 minutes now, and we didn't learn a whole heck of a lot about everyone else either, because there were a lot of draws over the weekend, and there wasn't anybody I thought who had a complete performance, except maybe LAFC, where they looked really good against Sporting on Sunday afternoon, and then DC United looked really good, but they're in the East. When I think of Western Conference teams, Minnesota had a really good game. They went to Vancouver. They won their first Western Conference road game ever in Vancouver over the weekend, and LAFC looked good. But then I look around the rest of the Western Conference, and I don't see anybody who, like, wow, man, they're going to be tough to beat. I saw question marks everywhere. I saw question marks with Portland, obviously. I saw question marks with Colorado, too. It's not, there's no finished product after 90 minutes, but I think it's playoffs or bust every year.
Let's rewind a bit to last week, and specifically Friday's MLS roster compliance deadline. We reported on last week's show that Nicholson was closing in on a green card, which seems like it's still in process. The team said he's on loan to allow them to get past that deadline until the green card comes through. But Friday, as Bobby Warshaw said on Twitter, it seemed like the Rapids waited for the Gio Dos Santos news to drop before announcing that Shkels and Gashi had been bought out and waived. Here's what we know. First, the team was in discussions with Gashi for some time. I think some fans were maybe confused a bit with social media and so forth and thought it was kind of a fast decision, but it was a thing that had been developing for days or weeks.
You don't waive a designated player unless you are sure that it's something you want to do, and you're not sure if it's something you want to do unless you've actually thought about it for a while.
Yeah, and it was kind of him to, like, buy people pizza, but that doesn't imply that it was a surprise, right? In a competitive midfield, Gashi didn't have the speed and fitness to compete for a starting spot. Gashi had a reported $1.65 million outstanding in guaranteed compensation left on his contract, so the team sent him into the MLS waiver process, but he was not claimed. That leaves them on the hook for paying out that full salary. After talking with an expert, I learned that his max roster charge of $530,000 does still factor into this season's salary cap budget. Looking into the summer, the Rapids could now sign a second DP and have space for a third DP player as either a young DP or pay the $150,000 kind of luxury tax of a standard third DP. Abby.
How are they going to get another DP when they're still paying Gashi's contract?
The cash money for it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, where do they
get
money?
If they didn't have money for it before, where is the money going to come from this summer?
You mean like the actual dollars that get paid to him?
The liquid cash.
They can't afford another DP because they're still paying for Gashi.
Yeah.
A young DP, yes, I'm on board with that. Like, okay. I think that could be a possibility. But I still don't think we're going to see another DP until next year.
I think if you're expecting a DP signing this summer, then I don't know. Like, I think you should have different expectations with what's to come from the Rapids organization under Kroenke.
I think it is unlikely, unless, as we were saying before the show, like a lot of
that's a bit of an unfair hit. We just had two DPs on the roster.
Right, in a league where having three is considered ideal.
Three's ambitious. How many teams actually have three?
I don't know off the top of my head, so I won't make it.
Not
a,
as many.
I won't pull a number.
Like Portland doesn't have three right now. Seattle don't have three right now. Sporting Kansas City don't have three right now. DC United don't have three right now.
But do you think they'll all go and sign one in the summer?
Portland's been trying to. Seattle likes where they're at. But I'm just saying, three, when a team has three DPs, it's usually a sign of ambition.
I think when you look at summer signing, I agree with your point that don't count on a DP joining the team this summer, no matter what, right? And whether it's a matter of the liquid cash or roster compliance or having the person to sign, all of these factors make it unlikely. But also, there's a part of me that organizationally, when you talk about the size of Kroenke Sports and so forth, I will say from my business experience, asking for $5 million or $10 million or $20 million, it's all the same paperwork. And I don't think that we want to sign somebody for $500,000 versus we want to sign somebody for $1.5 and we need that $1 million. I don't think it's actually the dollars that are the blocker. It's more of the political capital discussion that says like, oh, these did your last ones work out? You know, looks like no. How do we know these are going to be a different story? And I think whether it's to the fans or to the greater KSC organization, like the front office is going to have questions, hard questions to answer about why is this next round of DPs going to be different, right? Because we've been talking about 2020 for 2 years now.
Well, one reason it's going to be different is because it's a totally different person in charge making the decisions. Porig Smith didn't make those signings for Tim Howard and Gashi.
Is that true?
Yes.
I think he was for sure involved.
He was in the office for sure, but he wasn't the guy.
He wasn't the GM at the time.
Right.
But he was, I think, wasn't he some position with like an executive?
Interim. I think there was an interim tag on there.
Before then, I think he was just like the technical director or whatever. But I think he was involved in scouting Gashi, but I am 99.9% sure he was not involved with Tim Howard.
The Rapids will sign DPs someday, but in my opinion, the only way it happens this summer is if there is somebody who they have already scouted or they're scouting and they're planning to sign a year from now in the winter window, but all of a sudden there is pressure to get it done in the summer window. I think you now mechanically can feasibly get it done. Does that make sense?
I think that makes sense. But I also think you're right, and I think you have a point with, like, we know we like to blame Kroenke, and I never in my life thought I would be defending him. But when we see the list of salaries and see the Rapids aren't actually as low as we thought they are or thought they were, then I do think maybe you're onto something with there's something to prove that you can spend the money wisely before you get more. So, I think the next few months could really have an impact on what happens this summer. But I still don't think we're going to sign in like a big name DP this year.
So coming back to Gashi, it was surprising to me when I got into the details that there isn't a whole lot of financial upside for the business, given that he's still on the roster charge, still on the salary cap for this season. This looks more like a statement move about locker room and culture. Gashi was always characterized as kind of happy-go-lucky, had great Instagram. My kids still talk about him and Jermaine Jones. That doesn't seem to jive with Hudson's approach, what we hear referred to as this European mentality. Is the locker room better off without Gashi?
One thing I wanted to disagree with you there is that while there's not a financial upside, there is significant compliance, right, roster compliance upside to this move. It frees up an international slot. It frees up a DP slot, even though it doesn't necessarily free up the funds to sign a designated player. So that's still calculated, like, actual upside to the move, right? But I do think that you are 100% right about this being a statement from the front office about what sort of culture they want to build in the locker room. I definitely don't think Gashi fit in with what Hudson, like the culture of like fitness and pressing that Hudson wants to instill here.
So, but my question is, if you're going to say, you know, the happy-go-lucky doesn't necessarily jive with Hudson's approach, but yet Kai Kamara's Instagram stuff has been like all about that happy-go-lucky, all about that fun. So are you saying now that he's not going to fit well with the locker room
I think
because of that? Or
you can be lighthearted and also bring it in training, right? And I think that's something we've heard over and over about all the veterans who have come in, is their level of intensity when it comes to game time, when it comes to training, when it comes to preparation.
Well, that just tells us that what they do on Instagram or any happy-go-lucky attitude that they have or don't have is not an indicator of what they're like in the locker room or what they're like on the training pitch.
Connor, have you seen a transition from preseason to real season? Like, is it the same kind of culture around the team?
In what way?
Like, in preseason, I imagine you have more kind of like joking around. There's FIFA tournaments. There's like all kinds of essentially, yeah, you're in like spring training.
They can't play FIFA during the regular season now?
Well, it's called team bonding in the preseason.
They play a lot of Fortnite. But I think one thing we've seen is these guys, they do like to have fun, and they like to have fun as a team. We saw that with several Instagram videos. We saw that with Kai Kamara's Instagram takeover, where he just went up to guys and bothered them, and they turned around, and they were all laughing and joking and having a good time. And that was out there at training. And then we saw the one in the gym where they were heading the ball into the trash can all the way down the line, and then they went crazy and they erupted. They're having fun. They're having a good time. And I think that'll carry over into the regular season. Like, it is business when you step between the lines, but you're still a human being and it's still okay to have fun.
I feel like the statement piece of it was almost like secondary, because if they really wanted to make a statement, they would have done it at the end of the season, just cut them off, called it good. Or, I mean, I think the fact that they waited until the day before roster compliance, in my eyes, I see that more as they really needed an international spot. And then secondarily, they could make this statement to say, we don't care who you are. If you're not going to put in the work, then you're gone if we need to make a business move.
One thing I do want to add on top of that, or counter with, I should say, is what if you tell him at the end of the season that something's got to change and he shows up in preseason and balls out? That's why I don't think I think that's the reason why they didn't cut him at the end of 2018, not because it wasn't a bad year, because it was a bad year for Gashi. But I think they kept him on because he's going into his last season. If he shows up at preseason fit and is actually performing really well to the standard of which you're paying him, I think you keep him on. And, I mean, if he doesn't, then you make the decision then. I think it makes more sense to do it then than at the end of the season.
So if they didn't need an international spot, would they still have cut Gashi?
I think so.
I don't think so.
It's Connor. Interesting.
Are you talking to me?
It's interesting to note that outside of this conversation or conversations that we've had privately, I've seen almost no mention of it whatsoever. And so I think with regards to timing, there was some expertise executed here, that whether it's Gio Dos Santos or it's just opening weekend, it was completely off the radar. Have you seen anyone say much of anything about it?
Well, no, because I think most people figured, like, yeah, I get it. You know, he wasn't really performing. He wasn't really doing anything. They needed the international spot. They cut him loose. Like, I think, generally speaking, even though I think most fans, not all fans, liked Gashi, I think they still understood where the decision was coming from.
Speaking of the Champions League, let's talk CONCACAF Champions League.
Discount Champions League.
Discount knockoff Champions League. Last week we saw the second set of CCL matches with the Red Bulls, Dynamo, Sporting Kansas City, and Atlanta all moving on to the second round. It's the first time that more MLS teams move through than Liga MX teams. Is that a meaningful data point anyone should care about?
Not at all.
Yes, it is. I agree.
Yes.
Wow, am I alone here? Is that's a meaningful data point?
It could be two MLS teams in the finals.
Of course it's a meaningful data point.
That would be amazing.
Well, yeah, but
absolutely.
No. 2 years?
Look at it. If you look at it on a graph over a long-term period of years and you improve every year is a meaningful data point. And MLS is improving every year in CCL. And eventually, you know, it may not be this year, but eventually you get two or three teams in the semis. Then you do have a two-team final.
Until this round is over, I have seen nothing different this season that I haven't already seen 2 years ago, when there were four MLS teams in the quarterfinals and every single one of them lost every single game.
Which could very well happen.
So that's why I'm going to wait until after round two.
But this, the consistency of getting this many North American teams or American teams, they're all American now. Toronto got bounced. But if they were Canadian, this many American and Canadian teams forward, doing it consistently year over year, that's important.
Sure. And I'm not going to deny that it's like,
well, that's all we're saying.
Okay. Well, we agree it's important then. I just don't think it's necessarily like something of significance, a record that we should constantly talk about, like for being in
I don't think it's a record. I think it's okay, the ship's headed in the right direction.
Abby, you mentioned the possibility of a two MLS team final. To me, that would feel a little disappointing. Like you didn't kind of slay the beast in the final arena. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but it means they already slayed the beast in the earlier rounds.
You got to beat the best to be the best.
Man, well, they dropping would. All these truth bombs
they would,
today.
They would have had to get to an all MLS final.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. Do
you
teams...
just want it on the biggest stage with the most viewers and you want the whole world to watch. I get that. That's totally fair.
The top lineup too. I think and everything before the final, there are lineup questions and you're not necessarily getting the best when every team involved has league competition that week or 3 days before, 3 days after.
Well, I think you're right in that if it's two MLS teams, like we can see that any day. Like we could watch these teams play each other in the MLS regular season. But I think it's more than that in what Joseph was talking about, how it's not really, in his eyes, super impressive until they start getting further. So I think it would be a huge statement about the quality of play in MLS if it was two MLS teams in the finals.
Should Toronto feel queasy after getting demolished in the first round? They came back a bit this weekend with the Michael Bradley brace. Was getting eliminated from Champions League the best thing that could have happened to Toronto?
I don't think it's the best thing because it's still not like you're competing for a trophy, and anytime you lose out on competing for a trophy, it sucks. Like, I think it still hurts, it still stings, but you know, they looked fatigued after their Champions League run last year, so maybe it is not a good thing, but more of a blessing in disguise that now it's like, okay, we can just focus on the MLS regular season. But I don't think losing, especially in a game or a two-leg tie where you're the favorites, I don't think losing is ever going to be a good thing.
Abby, Panama's Independiente knocked off TFC, but now face Sporting Kansas City, who seemed like the MLS favorite in the second round. Is that your perspective?
I think it's a little bit tricky because I think Sporting had the easier team in the earlier rounds. But that being said, I think that, I mean, Sporting looked really good against, I can't remember the name of the team, Toluca? I thought they looked really good against Toluca. And I like I said, I think Toluca is one of the weaker teams that are kind of in it right now, while we're in it. But, yeah, I mean, I think Sporting could do it. I think they could.
Should go through. Joseph, we weren't 100% sure on Atlanta a week ago this time. Connor said that they would definitely be out after the second leg.
No. Everybody else said they would be out after the second leg.
Sorry,
your boy Connor was the only one to make the bold prediction that Atlanta would breeze past.
Wait a minute. I remember it being... and this is not a direct quote, but I remember it being they'll get an early goal, which is true. That's what they did. But you also said that they would fight for the next 80, 90 minutes and then finally get the clinching goal.
So it's predictive play-by-play. Didn't quite line up. But we will credit Connor with calling the Atlanta comeback.
I'm just about the facts here. I just want to make sure.
We'll get these facts, Joseph. Atlanta faces Monterrey now in the second round. What do you see happening there?
I mean, it's definitely one of the hardest matchups they could have gotten, which is something we could say about the vast majority of matchups in the quarterfinals, barring Sporting KC's. Honestly, like it's hard. Like going down to Mexico is very difficult. Going down to Monterrey in particular is difficult. They've got a very strong, passionate fan base. It's very difficult to play in at their stadium. If anybody could do it, it's Atlanta. Like, I think that has to be said.
Atlanta's lost their last three games on the road. I don't know if anybody could do it, it's Atlanta is the right track.
I meant if anybody could advance through this tie.
I don't know if I'd take that either. I think it could be Atlanta. With the new coach and with the loss of Almiron.
Which MLS team in the quarterfinals would you have thought had a better chance against Monterrey?
Red Bulls and Sporting.
Interesting. Okay.
Because they're not breaking in a new coach. They're not breaking in a new dynamic playmaker. And I think they have more depth than Atlanta. Atlanta, I mean, no offense to him, Atlanta's trotting out Breck Shea, which is not going to be everybody's...
All the offense to him.
That's not going to be everybody's first choice. It's not going to be everybody's first choice left wing back. Whereas I don't think Red Bulls and Sporting, I don't think their lineups have a similar weakness.
Well, Atlanta just lost to DC.
Yeah, like I said, they've lost their last three road games.
Yeah.
Connor, you mentioned Red Bulls who face Santos Laguna. Can they get through that?
Yeah, they can. They need to play well in the first leg at home, try to tie it, try to win it, and then go down there to Mexico and be like, we just got to find a way to get a result, whatever it takes. We got to nick a goal. You know, we got to be quick on the counter. Kaku has got to do something incredible, something like that, because, you know, you don't have Tyler Adams, who's that beast roaming the midfield.
As it stands, they're down 0-1 at home.
You mentioned playing on the counter. Abby, the Dynamo have got Tigres, currently number one in Liga MX. This seems like trouble for the Dynamo. You expect them to go out in this round?
I do. I don't think they're going to make it. But I also always wonder, like, where Houston comes from. Like, I always expect them to be way worse than they are. And I don't know if that's just something that I have in my head, but they always surprise me. So I don't think they will in this case. But I don't know. They just have like a couple weapons here and there that like come through in the clutch. And now they have Marlon Hairston, so obviously.
Obviously. They seem to show up sometimes in big games, right? Whether it's U.S. Open Cup or CCL.
Either way, it's probably a good thing for the Rapids if Houston and Sporting go as long as possible in this competition, because those are two of our next four matches.
Well, thank you for mentioning that, Joseph. Tying it back to the Rapids, Sporting Kansas City will play the second leg of this second round on Thursday, the 14th of March, just 3 days before the next home game here in Colorado, Sunday, the 17th of March. For the Rapids, is playing Kansas City on 3 days rest good or great?
Great.
It's great. You're staring at me. I'll start talking. I think there's no downside to it. Anytime a team is playing, you know, having double game weeks, regardless of where the games are, I think that's a good thing for the team who has not had a double game week.
Oh, yeah, because at that point you can take advantage of whatever, you know, who is exhausted, who maybe picked up a knock in the game. You know, you can then work that, you know, in your favor.
Speaking of Sporting Kansas City, MLS had a big opening weekend. The Rapids 4 p.m. start on Saturday meant we had time to watch games that evening and then a couple games on Sunday. Looking at opening weekend more broadly, what's one thing that caught your attention outside of Colorado, Connor?
I think this is a great question, Jeff, because there was a lot going on outside of Colorado in MLS. First of all, I want to say that Cincinnati, FC Cincinnati, they had their debut MLS game in Seattle, and from now on until they score another goal that is not a golazo, I'm just calling them bangers only, because their one goal that they scored, Bertone, I think he's their defensive midfielder, dude just banged it in. Bangers only for FC Cincinnati. Minnesota United, they get their first road dub in the Western Conference ever. That's huge. Montreal looked great. Ignacio Piatti is one of the best players that most people don't hear about because he plays in Montreal, and not all the news trickles down and up from there just because, you know, it's France. And then Taider, he scored the second one. I think he might be the most underrated player in MLS. Another one, DC United. I don't know if they looked just phenomenal or if Atlanta looked tired, but they won 2-0 against an Atlanta United team that seems to always struggle with DC United. So I think those are the things that caught my eye. Also, Zlatan Ibrahimovic scored a goal.
I only watched the Sunday games, but I thought both Sporting and LAFC look like they're going to be pretty dangerous this year, and I would expect to see them both at the top of the Western Conference again. And then as far as DC and Atlanta, I mean, I think it's hard to take something from that. I know DC was kind of coming into form towards the end of last season, and maybe they're just continuing that this season. But Atlanta, I mean, they're not good away. Like, they've never been good away. And they had the CCL matches, and I can't remember, DeBauer? How do you say their new coach's name?
Frank DeBoer.
DeBoer. He was obviously trying to hold back some of their PT, and who else did he hold out till the end of the game? He subbed them in late.
Tito Villalba started. Yosef Martinez started. Did Barco start?
Yeah, because he started playing better when PT Martinez came on. So, but they were obviously trying to hold back and not use some of the same guys that they were using before. But I don't. Everybody's like really psyched on Breck Shea, and it really like crushes my soul a little bit. Because
just to clarify what you said other people are psyched.
Other
on Breck Shea.
People. Other God. People.
Cite your sources, please.
He was getting taking a little bit more crap because he was playing like crap towards the second half of that game. But people were talking about how great he was playing in the first half and how great he's been playing in the CCL. And I'm not here for it.
I think one of my favorite things of the weekend was just seeing, Connor, as you were saying, about some of these teams that have been either off the radar or just punching bags, right? Like Minnesota and Montreal, just kind of always an afterthought. To me, one of my favorite things about MLS is the parity and how it feels like everybody's got a shot in every given game. And although it's bad for the Rapids in a way, like, it makes me excited to see teams on the come up. Like, I want to see every team be pretty good. And I mean, maybe not that one team, but I want to see the Rapids like fight and win against teams that are playing their game and they're playing well. Not just like, oh, we got a couple points off the people who struggle every season. Joseph, what'd you see?
I mean, the most interesting thing I saw was pretty much came as a result of the Cincinnati-Seattle game that Connor was talking about.
Bangers
a minute ago.
Only.
Bangers only for sure. But we also have another expansion team coming into the league with not with a bang, but with a
with
whimper.
A bangers only. Bangers only FC.
Okay. They lost the game, Connor.
Yeah, but they had the goal of the year in week one.
They were thoroughly dominated, and it was very much reminiscent of Minnesota United's entrance to the league. And it looks like, based on the people I talked to in Tennessee, might be something we should expect for Nashville as well. The question is, what does MLS need to do to have more expansion teams be like Atlanta and LAFC versus expansion teams that sort of come in not hitting the ground like hard at all, like Minnesota and Cincinnati?
That's a really interesting question, actually, because people, I think a lot of people will look at Minnesota and say, oh, the ownership's not engaged in winning. And it couldn't be further from the truth.
They're one of the most engaged ownerships in
the
league.
Their ownership their ownership's very engaged. But I think one of the things that you have to keep in mind is, A, it's a business. Everybody's trying to make a dollar. And B, some of these people are really unsure of just exactly what they've gotten themselves into, and they're going to spend year one, year two, however long it is, trying to survey the land.
Isn't that something that the multi-million-dollar, multi-year expansion process should have figured out before?
But there's no way you can prepare for it. There's no way you can prepare for it until you're in it.
Theoretical versus actual are two incredibly different things.
That's fair enough.
I think it's similar to on our first episode, Jordan was talking about game fitness and how, like, no matter what you do in preseason, you just can't get true 90 minutes fit until you're playing games, right? And I think it's the same way where 3 years, 5 years, it doesn't matter of that expansion run-up, it's just not the same until it's live.
Yeah, and Bangers Only FC, their ownership looks like it's very invested in winning, but it also looks like they're like, okay, we might have to take our lumps in year one, but we can learn a lot while we take our lumps and then take those lessons into year two.
We mentioned FC Cincinnati losing to the Seattle Sounders last weekend, 4-1. Jordan Morris made his return triumphantly, looked good all over the field. The Sounders ended up leading every stat in the box score. Abby, you got Jordan Morris thoughts?
I got some thoughts. People are talking about him making his comeback, and, like, sure, he scored a couple goals, but, like, dude's not looking fit. Like, he's got some room to go before he's the Jordan Morris that everyone knew and loved a couple years ago.
I think he's 11 months off the injury, something like
that. We need to call you Abby Aesthetics, because you just talked about him looking fit. Are you speaking about...
Do we need to talk about our conversation about him the other day?
Are you talking about the way Jordan Morris looks? Because he scored a goal with his left foot, which has not always been his strength.
That's
pretty
you.
Good.
So
he may have won Comeback Player of the Year in week one.
No. No. He still has to prove himself. It's the first week. Like, maybe he just got lucky.
One of these
scored
days,
a couple goals.
One of these days, we need Abby Mood's starting 11 of her most disliked. Oh. Breck Shea at left back.
Chicharito.
No, MLS only. If we go global.
Uh-oh. Summer transfer. Is there anything the Rapids should be learning from that Cincinnati game?
Score bangers.
Cincinnati lost the game,
yeah,
Connor.
They lost. I think the biggest one is Jordan Morris is going to be a problem. Jordan Morris is going to be a guy to key in on, and we saw him all over the place. He started, I think, on the right wing, but he was on the left wing for his first goal. So it's going to be up to Dylan Serna if he's playing left back, which we'll see when the lineup comes out Saturday, or it could be up to Keegan Rosenberry. I assume he'll be at right back, and then whoever's playing center back could be Declan Wynn, could be Danny Wilson. Tommy Smith is working his way back from injury. We don't know. Like, there's a lot up in the air right now. But I think Jordan Morris, like, he's the biggest question mark, because remember last year it was Raul Ruidiaz who scored two goals. And it's like, oh, man, he's a problem. And then Lodeiro in the midfield, oh, man, he's a problem. Like, Seattle has a lot of weapons.
Yeah.
But I think Jordan Morris was the one guy that Bangers Only FC, they kind of let him – they didn't key in on him so much. And you saw what happened. He was allowed to run roughshod.
Just those three up front bring a lot of speed, right? And I think some of the hardest defensive moments for the Rapids last season were a combination of, like, speed and technical skill really disrupting or just kind of embarrassing the back line. With a game running 20-30% faster on turf than it did in 4 inches of snow, it would not be surprising to me to see just some of those heartbreak moments, breakdowns on the defense this week. Abby, a week ago, there were a bunch of guys on the Rapids injury report. It didn't seem that anyone got injured or more banged up in the snow, somewhat surprisingly. Do you think anyone will be returning to the starting lineup this week based on what we saw last week?
From the back line or just like...
Just in general.
In general. I think a big portion of the maybe upper half that we saw is probably what we're going to see with, you know, Kamara and Rubio and Benny and those guys. I'd like to see Price play a full 90. But then the back line, like, that's tricky. And I think that there should be concerns with whether Jordan Morris is fit or not. I think there should be concerns about him with an iffy back line.
Saw Tommy Smith briefly in the hallway after Saturday's game and asked him if we're going to see him out there for Seattle. And he said, I hope so, which sounded to me like a probably not. With Axel suspended, Ford and Smith uncertain, does a back line with Rosenberry, Wilson, Wynn, and Serna have a shot against Ruidiaz, Morris, Lodeiro? Tell me why this won't be another 4-1 game for the Sounders.
I think even with Tommy Smith in there, like we were talking about earlier, does the Smith-Wilson combo work? I don't think so. So even if we had Tommy Smith in there and Wynn was out, I don't think it would make that much of a difference. So I'm not, like, I'm personally not really concerned about our fullbacks. It's just the center back pairing is such an issue for us and a concern.
Yeah, I think they do have a shot. I don't think it's like a super strong, like they'll stop everything kind of a shot. I don't see it being a 4-1 blowout. But, I mean, Seattle has always been formidable, whether they're here or whether they're at CenturyLink. They're just tough to go against.
To be fair, they are statistically less formidable early on in the season. So it's probably a really good thing that we're playing them at CenturyLink at this stage of the season, as opposed to after Brian Schmetzer has his chance to sign whatever mid-season transfer that takes him to the playoffs. so, yeah, I mean, It'll definitely be a shootout. I said that for the last game, and I was right. But everybody looked at me like I was crazy when I said that last week. But I think that most games this year are going to be shootouts. And I think the question is not whether or not Colorado's defense can stop teams, because I don't think they really can. It's whether or not they can outscore their opposition.
Well, here's what I think is in the Rapids' favor going into this weekend. The last time the Rapids beat Seattle in Seattle was May 21st, 2016. It was a 1-0 win for the Burgundy Boys. But second of all, experience. Bringing in Kai Kamara, who played in the Cascadia Cup, bringing in Benny Failhaber and Diego Rubio, who won there in Seattle with Sporting Kansas City, they're not going to be intimidated by that menu. They're not going to see it as a house of horrors. They're like, well, we've won here before. It's Seattle. And I think that is one of those things that maybe doesn't get talked about, maybe doesn't get mentioned, but when you're on the pitch in between the lines, that sort of experience shows out. It's kind of like how in the March Madness tournament every year, there's always that one mid-major where it has five seniors that goes to the Elite Eight or something like that, because they've been there before. They have that experience. They know what they're doing. And now the Rapids can kind of, they can take that experience from those guys and impart it maybe on some of these younger guys.
I think the venue plays a part. And for so long, Seattle has been the place with the loudest fans, the place with the most attendance, and has really worn that identity, right, as the 12th man. And I'm curious to see this season if, with Atlanta established as now that team, now that venue, can Seattle kind of rally and get back to a spot where people are intimidated to come play on that field? Or is it just a big football stadium that has a sizable number of people?
I think they still have that. I mean, Atlanta as an expansion team, all the way on the East Coast and the Eastern Conference, I think when it comes to the Western Conference, I think Seattle and Portland still have that. And I would argue that maybe even LAFC is starting to have that environment too, because it is loud in there, and they have a whole, like, the supporter section is the whole side. Someone probably also thinks that maybe there are other teams like Sporting Kansas City that might have that environment as well. But I would argue that Seattle, Portland, those are still super intimidating places to go play. I mean, guys talk about it all the time.
Last week, we did a couple over-unders. Want to follow up on that, report back. Joseph took the under on 5.5 yellow cards in the game, and he was correct.
Fun fact, a home team has yet to record a yellow card in a Snow Classico at Dick's Sporting Goods Park.
Such specific facts over here.
All right, Abby took the under, a parlay of both under 5.5 goals and under 5.5 yellow cards. So we got to give you the miss there. You only got one out of two. Eugene was correct with the over on 2.5 rapid subs. I was personally heartened to see subs used well, I thought, and like were difference makers through the game. And Connor missed on taking the over on 2 points for the Rapids, sadly.
I won't fault me for that one.
To be fair, I think, going back to what we said earlier, like that red card, it doesn't happen. I think the Rapids win that game.
Yeah, so I'll give myself a pass here.
Nothing new there. So we'll now get to Jess's favorite part, over-unders for this week. Jess, over-under 60 game minutes for Mr. Jack Price.
I'm really hoping for over.
Over. Abby, you got an over-under on Jack Price minutes?
Oh, we're doing all of these this time. Are you taking notes over there so you can tell us about it next week?
We're actually recording it, so I don't have to write it down.
I'm just saying. Wow. I'm going to say over for 60 minutes for Jack.
Connor, over under 0.5 goals for Kai Kamara.
I'm going to say under, but only because I think Diego Rubio takes that goal this week, and I think they might just go back and forth every weekend.
Joseph,
why not both?
I think Connor looked at my notes before the show, because that's my answer. I think Rubio's going to be the one. If anybody scores this week, I'd expect it to be him as opposed to Kai.
I thought you said it was going to be a shootout, and it was offense was going to score.
Maybe,
and now you're saying if anybody scores.
Maybe I didn't mean it if as in like
Diego Rubio has.
I'm not expecting scores. I'm just expecting Diego Rubio to score more likely than others.
I think I'll take the over on Kai.
Over on Kai. Abby, over under 5.5 goals total in this match.
I'm going to say under.
Ooh, okay. A little bit of defense showing up.
think it's going to be like 2-2.
Uh-huh. And Joseph, I feel like you're going to be on the over.
Over.
Over. Connor, your second favorite player, Jordan Morris, over under 1.5 total goals plus assists in week two.
Under. Jomo is going to get shut down.
Jess?
I'm kind of hoping for that myself, actually.
Going under. All right. And Abby, over under 2 points for the Rapids.
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me about Jordan Morris. I was so ready.
All right, I really get Jordan Morris.
We either need
it.
To all answer these, all of them,
I was
or just
doing two
pick
people
it.
For each one.
That throws me off.
Okay. You want me to ask you? I'll ask you. Here we go.
No, it's fine. Abby. Just ask me the ones you want to ask.
No,
me.
I'll ask it. Abby, what do you think about
I shouldn't be allowed to do these things.
We're good. We're so on it. Abby, what's your over-under 1.5 total goals and assists for Jordan Morris?
Under.
Under. Zero?
I know that's a surprise. I don't know about zero, but if I assume the game is going to end 2-2, I'm going to say that Jordan Morris is not involved in both of those goals. So he can have, like, an assist or something, I guess. But yeah, under 1.5.
And Joseph, over-under 2 points for the Rapids this weekend.
This one's hard. Because I think realistically speaking, the best Colorado can really hope for and expect for going into the match is a draw. So I'm going to say under.
And we'll finish with Connor, over under 2 points for the Rapids.
Hammer that over.
Couldn't see that coming. All right, that's it for episode 3 of the End Line. If you have questions or comments about the show, talk to us on the Rapids subreddit, tweet us at Endline Podcast, email us at contact@endlinepodcast.com. For myself, Abby, Connor, Jess, Joseph, Nick on the soundboard, thanks for listening and have a great week.